It's May 16th, 2008. I'm Mike Benedetti, and this is 508, a show about history. Welcome again, everyone. Today I'm talking with Brendan Melican. Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
I wanted to mention The Dragon Sorcerer, which is a play which was written and performed by basically a bunch of 10 and 12-year-old kids in the city. We interviewed a couple of them a few episodes back, and I actually went to both performances of it. I enjoyed the first one so much, I went back the next night for the second one. I expected that it would be charming and entertaining, but it was even better than I expected it to be. And it had a wonderful message about quarry reform in there, which was put in a totally silly but very heartfelt way. I really liked that. And here is a quick interview I did with the author, Asa Needle, after the show. Asa Needle, author of The Dragon Sorcerer. How did it go?
It went very well. Obviously, there were a few mistakes and little things, but I think as a whole, we got across to the audience. They liked the idea, the story.
Massive laughs, massive applause.
Yeah, that's what we were aiming for. And yeah, and we got the Corey message across without making the melodrama dulled, you know. We got the action, the message, the laughs, you know. I think it went all really well as a whole.
What's next for the Stone Soup Learning Collective?
I don't know. This one was so hard and took so long. I don't know if we're going to have another one for a long time, but, you know.
When you have another one, I'm buying a ticket.
All right, great.
All right, and we're back. What did you want to talk about today, Brendan?
Jeez, I don't know. We've got a lot of raises going on in the city. We can probably start there. I mean, the city council raise, I think everyone has just kind of been waiting on since that was announced quite some time ago and quite publicly. That was a big topic of discussion going into, you know, last year's election.
Right. This was a raise which they had voted themselves and then kind of all unvoted themselves, decided not to take?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, that was just reading over the way it stands. I think everyone kind of decided, well, if it was approved, then they wouldn't say no to it, but they wouldn't necessarily be willing to actively vote for it. So, yeah, I guess it was like we won't turn down free money, but we're not going to ask for it, sort of deal.
Kate Toomey made an odd comment about how, well, you know, it was the last council who approved this, so I think we have to take this raise. As though she was not part of the last council. As though there was a huge turnover in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't think that one's too big of a deal. I mean, to some extent, I actually do agree with the notion that if we want to be attracting, you know, better people to those jobs, because it's a pretty crappy gig, all things considered. You know, if you really think about, like, what the city councilors do, it doesn't require that much, like, you know, physical presence. I get time in terms of physical presence and whatnot, but the amount of constituent time and whatnot, it's definitely not the greatest that I could conceive of.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really, it essentially pays a stipend, although their health insurance, their benefits that go along with it. So, I mean, it's arguable whether or not it's meaningful in terms of finances. But I don't think making that particular job a little bit more attractive is necessarily a bad thing. I'm actually a fan of making it. I think it should be a full-time gig as well, too, like an officially full-time gig. And I know a lot of people would disagree with me there, but I think if we did that, we'd probably see more interest from, you know, better qualified people. And there's an argument to be made for that. But on the same token, you know, I mean, yesterday we kind of seen, you know, apparently part of this year's budget is going to be a series of relatively huge raises for a lot of O'Brien staff. Those I kind of have a problem with. Because, you know, we're talking upwards between 10 and 25% raises for a lot of the upper echelons of his cabinet. I mean, we're talking about what should be, everyone always wants to compare O'Brien's staff to, like, you know, the operation of a CEO and his staff, right? I mean, we want to compare this to, like, private enterprise.
Right.
But except that in private enterprise, you know, raises like this would be performance-based, or at least we hope they would be. And I don't know what metrics we're using to, in terms of performance, like, so we're going to give someone a 25% pay raise. Have we seen a 25% increase in their productivity? Or, you know, is that department, like, you know, I mean, we're talking about raises for people like the guy who runs the golf course. you know, and Julie Jacobson, assistant city manager, is getting a pretty substantial raise. I don't know that any of these folks have actually shown huge increases in their department's productivity. So I would question the legitimacy of those because they're huge. I mean, they're pretty crazy raises. I mean, so Julie Jacobson's going from $105,000 a year to $131,000 a year. That's a pretty sizable jump.
It is.
I mean, it's a $25,000 raise, and I don't know what has Julie Jacobson done to deserve an extra $25,000 a year. I don't know anyone could answer that completely. Thoughts?
I would just echo the sort of general conventional wisdom that when the city doesn't have money, that's not the time to be raising people's salaries. Let's say you were, in charge of, civil rights for the city.
Sure.
If you're the civil rights person for the city, how do you even have a metric? I mean, how do you have a hard number? Overall, though, this is something that I can't get worked up about, because I feel like the city is just basically kind of doomed in more fundamental ways. And, $500,000 a year here or there.
You're absolutely right. That alone is not a big deal. And if that's all it was, I would actually be just like with education funding. If it ended right there year to year, I would be the first one to come out and say, please raise my property taxes to pay for that. But the reality is that these jobs, like all state jobs or all municipal jobs, now become part of the pension system. So we're paying for these raises exponentially for the rest of her life. Yeah, and I don't think on a long enough timeline. I mean, we're. I think we're already. If we stretched out our budget forecasting now in parallel to the way that we're handling pay increases in the city now, or even statewide, we don't have to just pick on Worcester. I think we would find that within our own lifetimes, we're heading into negative numbers. I mean, things can't keep getting worse and worse on a yearly budget cycle, and at the same time have people who are going to be long term recipients of state funds in terms of the pension system. We can't be giving them increases, or they can't be seeing increases. It just doesn't make any sense. At some point in time, something's going to give.
I see what you're saying.
Or we get to file bankruptcy.
I see what you're saying. I'm looking at the comments on the Telegram and Gazette site. There's 68 comments. It's interesting because a couple of them are written by online staff arguing with people about why their comments were taken down.
Yeah.
Boy, I wish that these were in reverse chronological order. Actually, I wish that they were in chronological order, and I wish that they had date stamps on them so I could know when these were done. Anyhow, we've complained about that.
The comments are inflammatory like they always are.
Well, here's somebody who says, the city manager has finally lost my support. I wanted to mention something about Charter Communications, which happened this week. Charter has the cable contract for the city of Worcester, and so a lot of people in the city get their internet access through Charter. And earlier this week, somebody said to me, oh, I heard that Charter is going to start tracking everybody's internet use in the city and using it to like insert ads in their web pages. And I said, well, this sounds like an urban legend to me. If Charter was doing something like this, I think we would have heard about this. It would have been kind of a big deal. I said, can you show me some documentation of this? And the person came up to me and gave me a letter that they had been sent. And sure enough, this is more or less what's going on. And there's also a New York Times article this week. Charter will monitor customers' web surfing to target ads. And they're not actually inserting ads.
I don't know the technical. I don't know if it's an overlay or if they. I think in some cases they actually partner up with bigger ad serving providers.
It says it's from the Nebu ad system, which will associate each user's behavior with 1,000 categories of interest. Yeah, you would think that they're not going to insert ads. It's just going to be people who use this ad system already. Websites that already are using this ad system somehow will have better information about you if you're a Charter customer.
Yeah. The problem that I have isn't the ads. It's the data collection, though.
Yeah. This is data that you would just wish that they would not even be collecting to begin with.
Right.
I think that somebody in an email to me had said, oh, this isn't really that big of a deal. I'm already kind of assuming that this is going on.
Yeah.
And especially people say, oh, well, there's like a little bit of and anonymity here. We're preserving anonymity. But the trouble is that, if let's say you've got a city and Charter is operating in the city and somebody is blogging about somebody in the city and complaining about them, and this person wants to figure out who this blogger is, and they go to their buddy who works at Charter and they say, hey, do you think you could kind of, you know, get me some information about, you know, whatever? Who, you know, do you guys have any users in the city of Blobberg who are going to such and such a website like 100 times a day? And if so, that person's probably the blogger, and can we figure out who this guy is? And, you know.
Well, we've already seen that that's very possible. I'm trying to remember the ISP that had a data breach not too long ago, within the past couple of years. And, but it was all based, it was based on search queries, right? It was a search engine that had a data, you know, had a problem with data, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, we know that you can identify people anonymously, right? I mean, because if you take any sort of geographic area, and then you take, especially when it comes to search, right? I mean, all you have to do is look at, like, okay, you look for, you know, like genealogy type sites, or, you know, employment type sites. You know, and with a very small amount of data, you can start linking up individuals, because there are only so many people that might be looking for, like, one particular last name.
Right.
And at the same time, looking at, like, one company's, like, stock earnings or whatnot.
Or you see who's doing a bunch of vanity searches for Brendan Mellican in the city of Worcester, and you say, well, that's his house. Now we know his house. Now we know everything he's looking at. There's some discussion here on a Washington Post thing about, what do they call it, deep link analysis or something weird like this? Deep packet inspection. And talking about how, you know, people are potentially have access to your emails. Again, it seems like a bad deal. Here it is. Deep packet inspection enables a far wider view. Every web page visited, every email sent, and every search entered. Every bit of data is divided into packets that the system can analyze, access and analyze for content. And I'm not sure if this is exactly what Charter is using, but this is the kind of thing. This is the kind of thing that we're dealing with here. I'm a little disappointed. I know that Worcester Magazine is at least theoretically interested in putting a blurb about this out there. It's frustrating that the Telegram and Gazette has not put anything out there. You know, some people would say, oh, it's because Charter is a big advertiser and they don't want to, you know, get into a thing with Charter if they don't have to. I would think it's more because they just, you know, it's not like a high-profile issue. Like anything internet, if it involved YouTube or MySpace, they would be all over it because they love writing articles about YouTube and MySpace and to a lesser extent Facebook. But stuff like privacy issues, it seems like it's not that big on their radar.
Although, you know, I mean, we're talking, we all have lots of good friends over at Worcester Magazine, so I don't want to pick on them too much. But I'm looking at a copy of Worcester Magazine that just happens to be sitting on my desk, and there's a big ad from Charter right on the cover, right?
They always have the big Charter ad on the back.
I don't want to get all conspiratorial on Worcester Magazine, but until Alan Fletcher told me otherwise, then yeah, I would assume that has more to do with advertising than anything.
You know, Scott Zoback did spam Pie and Coffee the other day.
Screw them then. Yeah, they're open games.
We should totally rake him over the coals for this to get revenge for posting that spam comment.
Until Zoback covers the story, it's all a conspiracy.
So I will put a link in the show notes to a little information about this. Also, I'm going to link to this. Funnily enough, on the Instructables weblog, which has been posting hacks from Cory Doctorow's novel Little Brother, which I put a section of in the podcast a couple weeks ago. Yesterday, they have a thing called Encrypt Your Gmail Email. If you want to be sure your email can be read by no one but you, then it needs to be encrypted. Actually, I want to make sure it can be read only by me and the person I'm mailing it to.
Very important.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's a diary.
Speaking of complaining about newspapers, the In-City Times is out this week.
Hooray!
Or out last week, I guess. I can never get it in time for that morning's show. Little article. The Telegram and Gazette's Diane Williamson trolls for readers. Rosalie Terrell, of course, hates Diane Williamson. So this is about something that we talked about a few weeks ago, about the Telegram and Gazette circulation troubles. And a Diane Williamson column, which was, I think, supposed to be... I mean, it was supposed to be funny, like many of her columns. And it ended up kind of coming off as insulting, unfortunately. And Rosalie Terrell, my suggestion to the New York Times, the TNG's owner, fire the TNG top-level editors. Leah Lamson, Harry Whiten, and the rest of the paper's top-level editors have been leading the TNG in circles, it seems, for years. How can these tired old Telegram and Gazette lifers bring fresh/new ideas to the table? Rosalie Terrell actually being one of the few people who I think can, despite coming off as kind of a jerk in this article, I think can legitimately criticize the Telegram and Gazette because she actually runs a print-only publication that she actually makes money from.
Yeah.
You know, so again, as much as stupid as the Incity Times is, oftentimes, it's a kind of amazing that it exists, and it's definitely a tribute to her hard workingness and possibly a deal she has with Satan. I'm not exactly sure how else.
Yeah,
she keeps
it's
thing
crazy. It's, I mean, it's an advertising-driven print-only publication, which those are not supposed to be alive anymore. But the only thing that what differentiates it from a paper like, you know, Lister Magazine or the Telegraph or Gazette are just expectations. Like, her expectations for generating revenue are lower, or at least more reasonable and in line with the community that the paper exists in. You know, I mean, the Telegram's revenue expectations are on par with, you know, just a scaled-down version of the New York Times.
Right.
Right. I mean, so that's a broken model. I mean, that can't work in Worcester, where people are, one, not buying papers anymore, and two, you know, the overall economic picture is less than stellar. But yeah, Rosalie's actually doing the right thing there. If she just wasn't such a giant jerk, it might be more impressive.
Well, I have to say, Rosalie, if you're listening to this, thanks for always writing my articles when I send them in, despite me saying bad things about the Incity Times. It's actually, somebody handed this to me because they saw a little blurb in here called Operation Ranger Rosary, Inspiration for the Troops, about people at Our Lady of the Angels Parish making rosaries and mailing them to the troops. Which I think is a great thing. Although I have to take exception to this one little paragraph in here. While military training has equipped them physically and mentally, they can also be equipped spiritually to withstand whatever challenges they meet. There is no greater power than to place in the hands of our soldiers the rosary. And I have to say, actually, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit would all be greater powers in a Christian way of thinking than giving someone a rosary. But there you go. Still a nice thing. Speaking of Roman Catholicism, do you want to talk about Planned Parenthood?
Sure.
You were the one who wanted to talk about this. I should say, yeah. First, I always feel weird talking about this because abortion is something that I think is bad, but I'm not an activist on it. I don't have any real thoughts on strategy. I'm not necessarily convinced that legislation is like a way to deal with this problem, but I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah. So they had a meeting earlier this week regarding the move from Planned Parenthood over to Pleasant Street, right?
Right.
It's going to be over by Park Ave. So it's a big hearing, which is an interesting thing. That's a hearing, right? Because it's not like we're introducing Planned Parenthood to Worcester. It's been here for a really long time. They're just moving to a newer facility. So I'm not really sure why they need a hearing. It's a business that does whatever, whether it's not for profit or profit. I mean, it does something at least under federal laws, like, perfectly legal, right? And the hearing drew out, I think it drew out some really crazy people. I mean, potentially insane people. And it was like, I kind of have the same opinion that you do. It's like, I'm actually on the exact opposite side of things. I don't have any problem with abortion at all, but I don't consider myself an activist on it all. It's just, I think it's one of those things that we've already figured out and probably come as close to ever having, like, some... Like, the agreement on it is, like, nobody's ever going to agree on this, right? So that's been the case for pretty much all time. But you've got some really interesting people that came out for this hearing. And it appears, if you read the Telegram Gazette article, the only people that they put on the record against the organization moving were insane people. Or So they had this guy, Jay Gillette of Holden. Okay, so his big quote was, that Planned Parenthood conspired with men who rape children, and this is based on a California investigation where Planned Parenthood counseled a girl who had been impregnated by an older man, but then, like, it was actually a setup, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't like a real person coming in that had been raped. It was like a what sort of thing, and a bunch of researchers said, let's see if we can pull a fast one over Planned Parenthood. So one, it wasn't even like a real crime that was involved. But the thing that struck me was that this guy who's using this as like his big example of why we can't have Planned Parenthood in Worcester, he got his facts wrong. I mean, like, it was actually a 13-year-old. It was a woman posing as a 13-year-old girl, not a woman posing as a 15-year-old girl, which is key, right? I mean, if you're going to be making a case against something, you'd at least want to start getting your facts right. I mean, you're going on the record. So, I mean, this guy from Holden is on the record in the Worcester paper record with stuff that just doesn't make any sense.
We should point out that this guy from Holden is actually a prolific blogger. I will link to his blog. And the only time I've ever seen him, he was actually a defense witness at the Sirignano trial, where he stood out as the worst dressed person connected to the entire trial. This includes myself and other people sitting around. Anyway.
But they've got a woman in here who they don't even identify her. They just say that she's a breast cancer survivor, which I don't know what that has to do with Planned Parenthood, but that's her name, is breast cancer survivor. And she's talking about how since Roe versus Wade, this is her like claim to fame. She says 468,000 abortions have been performed on African American women. And then the next line is, this is her quote, 30% of the black population has been erased through abortion since 1973. Now, I mean, my math is terrible, right? But if we're saying that there are 31 or 37 or so million blacks in the United States of America, and that she's saying that 468,000 abortions have been performed, and then she's saying that 30% of the black population has been erased, her math is off somewhere. Like, her math is worse than mine, right?
It is just sort of a weird article. I'll read the first two paragraphs. Those favoring the proposed move of the Planned Parenthood of Massachusetts clinic from Lincoln Street to a new building on Pleasant Street said at a state need determination hearing yesterday the new facility would provide safer, better service to the expected 10,000 plus clients, as well as ample parking and easy access to public transportation. Those against the move said that they were opposed because Planned Parenthood killed hundreds of women, engaged in genocide against African Americans, conspired with child rapists, and scammed the state of California out of tens of millions of dollars. I guess my general take on this, and again, I'm not necessarily somebody who knows a lot about strategy on this, is that it just seems like it's like a kitchen sink kind of a deal. It's like you're pulling every kind of crazy thing out, and you just come off looking foolish, and I think you distract from the core issue. And I mean, on many other activist issues, I feel like I see this happen and maybe engage in this myself. Many a time at an anti-war demonstration, you know, somebody will come up to debate you, and sometimes you can stay on topic, but sometimes people will, like, you'll be talking about, you know, why is the Iraq war bad, and people will be bringing up, like, depleted uranium and all kinds of, like, sort of left-field, irrelevant topics. Because, you know, it's the same way I think if somebody says, why do you not like George Bush? And you can sit there and be like, well, I can come up with 10,000 reasons. And, right. You know, some of those 10,000 reasons are pretty small potatoes, but things that are easy to talk about. So you end up – or are colorful. So you end up bringing up those things rather than – your real core, you know, three or four bullet points of opposition.
But they probably all they really had to do was just find like one person who lives or has a business in the area to come and say this would disrupt traffic, and it would probably like bring the entire project to a screeching halt.
I just feel like this is like whenever we first started talking about anti-Semitism in Darfur on this program. This is just going to cause problems down the road.
Some days, yeah, someone's going to dig these up. But hey. Whatever.
Let me read a flyer. This is about quarry reform. Walk to freedom. Do you want to stop quarry from holding good people down? So quarry is the Criminal Offender Records Index, which is the thing, CORI. And so whenever you apply for some jobs, your employer will check this, and it will give them some amount of information. I think about your past 15 years. Of criminal history, and there are many objections to this. And I think that there's actually a pretty broad coalition of people who would like to see some change in this, and it's more a question of what degree of reform are you looking for.
Right.
This flyer is about a walk which is being done by EPICA, which is an ex-prisoners and other people group in the city of Worcester that's been working on quarry reform for several years now. They're doing a walk from Worcester to Boston, May 18th through May 22nd. Kickoff, Worcester City Hall, May 18th at 9 a.m. If you're interested, you can call them at 508-410-7676. There you go.
Do you have any thoughts on the report that came out or was, you know, made public this week about the jail?
This is one where I don't feel like I know anything about how jails are run.
Mm-hmm.
This is a report we should say to people, you know, that the feds are saying, well, the Worcester County Jail is not being run well enough, and you need to do several dozen things. And this is one of these things where, you know, like I'm sure that these several dozen things are very reasonable. I don't know whether to be very upset about a report like this or just to sort of note it.
Right. The only thing that I saw that was, and I mentioned it on Rage Ball there, the one thing that just seemed outrageous was, you know, that the deputy superintendent of the jail, and one of the claims was that, you know, the government was saying you don't have a proper system for a reasonable system for grievances, right, for filing grievances with the jail. And then the deputy superintendent comes back and says, well, you know, the Constitution doesn't say we need to provide any, you know, form of filing grievances against the jail. Which, you know, I mean, I know that the that redress of grievances is like the bastard, you know, stepchild of the First Amendment. But come on, I mean, like, it's right there at the beginning. I mean, you can't even make it to number two without bypassing that one. It just seemed really, really odd that they put somebody that he would put that on the record, and at the same time, like, demand or you know that the government retract like all of these false allegations against the jail.
The way he came off in that article, he was just really was like swinging. I mean, he was mad, and he was, you know, he did not like this report at all.
I mean, well, sure. I mean, that I guess that's their baby. I mean, I can imagine they're taking it personal, but it's kind of a big deal. And this is another case too, where, you know, I was looking over the Telegram website, you know, for comments and whatnot. The comments are just crazy. I mean, it's like it's everybody. The majority of the comments were essentially, well, as soon as you commit a crime, you lose all your rights. So what are these people complaining about? It's like, well, no, actually, it's like when you commit a crime, that's when most people start taking advantage of their rights. You know, we don't strip people of their rights when you commit a crime. That's when we make sure that people are making use of their rights. That's why we have rights. You know, I mean, if we were all just walking around, you know, not doing anything wrong, we really wouldn't need rights because everything would keep itself in check. But it's when, you know, somebody accuses you of something that you need to make sure your rights are there. If these guys aren't providing some pretty basic constitutional means for people to petition their treatment, then yeah, that's a very broken system. What's surprising, I think, is that guy Glotus hasn't been heard from yet. I mean, he's typically a pretty boisterous politician, right? I mean, it's hard not to hear from guy Glotus sometimes. And then this 40-page report comes up from the feds, and apparently, I think I was told once he was on vacation. So, like a really, really sweet week to go on vacation. His name was up in a federal trial last week.
Yes.
And that Martha trial for this mysterious $20,000 check. And then this relatively disappointing report from the feds and off on vacation.
Diane Williamson writing in the Telegram and Gazette about how one of his aides has a really sweet deal with a SUV or something paid for by the sheriff's office.
Yeah, it's like she's like a processor, essentially. And she has $70,000... I think it was a $70,000 salary and a SUV with free gas.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. I'm going to Washington, D.C. Monday and Tuesday. We're doing a Darfur demonstration, trying to take advantage, I guess, of the window of opportunity that has been presented now with everyone protesting China for everything over the Olympics. And we will be visiting the Chinese embassy and the Sudanese embassy. Sudanese embassy, a place that actually I have very fond memories of because I've had many positive experiences with the staff there, despite, you know, objecting to many of the things that their government does. They're nice people there, and hoping that the Chinese embassy has similarly pleasant folks that we can talk to about how China can change some of its foreign policy.
That would be fascinating if that's really all you had to do was just go and strike up a conversation, and you'd find that yes, in fact, everybody really.
Yeah, you know, it's not going to change things.
But what if it did? That's what I'm saying. I'm like, that'd be awesome.
Somebody was complaining about this. They posted a comment to something I'd put up, complaining, "Oh, why are you always picking on, you know, Sudan, blah blah blah." And I'll repeat what I said in that comment there, which is that as an American, I feel like I have essentially no leverage over foreign governments. I have little enough leverage over my own government. So you know, this is why whenever people are like, "Well, why aren't you protesting like what some country is doing to its people?" And the answer is because protesting can maybe be part of a strategy for petitioning the U.S. government. Protesting, like having a protest about Burma in downtown Worcester, you know, is not a very good use of time. Much better to use that time writing letters to the Burmese government or doing other kinds of organizing, I think. This is the rare case where the Chinese are like center stage for all these kinds of abuses that they've had, and where, you know, people want to write about it. Like, I'm pretty sure that Coleman McCarthy, who writes in the Washington Post, among other places, is going to be at this demonstration and write something. So, like, these guys are, you know, the press is looking for excuses to, you know, to get this issue out there. The press, for some reason, just is really interested in writing about China's foreign policy and domestic policy these days. So it's like, why not? This is like, so basically what I said to this guy was, at least at this point, I could theoretically be a drop in the bucket. Normally, if I was doing a protest against China, it wouldn't even be a drop in the bucket. It would be nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It'll be nice to be down in D.C. for a few days, though. I'm trying to think if there's anything else this week.
There's always something. Come on.
I don't think so. I'm looking through all my paperwork here. Is there anything that you're excited about this week? Anything cool going on in Worcester?
Anything cool going on in Worcester?
Oh, I should mention, too, that WCCA is having a public hearing on Wednesday, which will be cablecast and put on the internet live at 6 o'clock on Wednesday. Public is invited to go down there. WCCA is dependent for its funding on money that the city is given by Charter as part of the cable contract. And the city recently negotiated a deal with Charter, which basically preserves the amount of money that they're getting from Charter. And so WCCA, my employer, I should mention, also a place where I put a lot of volunteers hours in, is dependent on the city passing some of that money along to it. I don't exactly remember what it's legally allowed to do with the money, but it uses it for other sort of IT and telecommunications projects. That's basically what it uses this money for. And so at this point, it's been a long time since the city and WCCA had any kind of real contract, and the time will come very soon where WCCA is getting no money while the city gets its act together over the contract. So I think as a part of an attempt to have some public conversation about this and make sure that city officials are aware, because I know that there are some city officials who were, and at least as of a month ago, had not realized that like everything was not cool with WCCA yet. They're going to have this public thing. And you could probably go up there and complain about WCCA, although I don't think a lot of people would bother to come down if they just went to complain. But basically, I think it'll be a public forum where people will speak to the television audience at home and the assembled people and say, this is what I think about cable access. And
yeah, that can't go away. As much as I like to complain about WCCA sometimes, but it can't go away. It's really ridiculous to think that it's even in jeopardy.
Well, what are you going to do? I always feel like the numbers are on WCCA's side. When you look at the amount of money, I mean, WCCA generates something like $1 million worth of services for the city's nonprofits. Mm-hmm. Over and above being like a cable access station and, having programming in a dozen languages for the different immigrant mm-hmm. communities in the city and having an internship program, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, it seems like WCCA essentially provides more dollar-wise more services for the city than the city pays for it. So, like, why not? Right. I don't know. This is like one thing where I feel like there actually is a metric which says the station is doing a great job. I would think like if you got an extra $50,000, that would be a nice place to even put it if your city was like, had extra money to spend, because you're going to get more than $50,000 out of it for the city.
Unfortunately, we have to give people raises, Michael. Hey, listen. You just reminded me of something. We were talking about Charter earlier, and I don't know what about WCCA's Spurs is. I don't know if I mentioned this to you earlier in the week, but my big question about Charter and their advertising program was, so they're scanning packets to make this happen, right? I mean, they're scanning web traffic to make this happen, site visited and whatnot. Isn't Charter who provides the backbone for the city's internet services?
I believe that they do.
So if they're doing that, doesn't that also mean that they would be scanning
sensitive police information?
Well, just anything. I mean, if they're
sensitive employee records.
If we're going to be having traffic passing through Charter servers, or a third party service, because it's really not even Charter that's doing this. It's a third party contract company that's going to be doing the scanning for them, and they're saying that they're not going to be, tracking sex related stuff or whatnot. So they'll have no data on me. But which will probably even raise more flags. But
if you want to opt out, the way that you opt out is actually by having a cookie sitting on your computer, I guess, telling Charter, don't pay attention to this guy.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is really cool, because it's basically like, if you're going to like screw around with the customer data, your first thing is, well, let's start looking at all the people who've opted out. What do they have to hide? Anyway, we know who they are because they all have this cookie.
But the thing with the city traffic seems odd. I mean, there must be a provision for not scanning or not collecting any data that could be passing through the city's pipes. And if that's the case, then why can't I be part of that? Like, I want to be part of that system.
Part of that parallel internet.
The parallel internet.
I don't know. Maybe we will find out. Probably we won't.
Probably not. We won't find out until the feds come crashing down through our doors.
If we were journalists, it would be a different story, but c'est la vie.
Everyone start using your Tor onion routers.
Tor is so slow. I don't know if people have used Tor. You know what? I'm totally going to put an explanation of Tor from the novel Little Brother by Cory Doctorow, which I'm allowed to excerpt in this podcast if I mention to you that you can buy it at craphound.com. And we will finish off the show with an explanation of the onion router.
I feel like I'm creating more work for you now.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. Everyone, thanks for listening to this show. It means a lot to us. The phone number is on the website. If you have any feedback, please just give us a call and we will put it in the show. Or you can put comments on the show, or you can email us or whatever. And I think we've been pretty good, except for like drunk dials. Pretty much anything else we'll put on the show.
Can we have a drunk dial?
We'll have a drunk dial. We'll have a drunk dialing show one of these days, maybe for episode number 40 or something like that. For episode number 40, we'll encourage people to sip a 40 and then call the show.
Sweet.
That's the idea. Everyone, we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Michael.
Bye-bye.
The school's network logged every click in and out of the system, which was bad news if you were planning on surfing over to the Harajuku Fun Madness site for some extracurricular fun. The answer is something ingenious called Tor, the Onion Router. An Onion Router is an internet site that takes requests for web pages and passes them on to other Onion Routers, and on to other Onion Routers, until one of them finally decides to fetch the page and pass it back through the layers of the Onion until it reaches you. The traffic to the Onion Routers is encrypted, which means that the school can't see what you're asking for, and the layers of the Onion don't know who they're working for. There are millions of nodes. The program was set up by the U.S. Office of Naval Research to help their people get around the censorware in countries like Syria and China, which means that it's perfectly designed for operating in the confines of an average American high school. Tor works because the school has a finite blacklist of naughty addresses we aren't allowed to visit, and the addresses of the nodes change all the time. No way could the school keep track of them all. Firefox and Tor together made me into the Invisible Man, impervious to Board of Ed snooping, free to check out the Harajuku FM site and see what was up.